Welcome into the Flight Plan Podcast. We have a stacked show for you this morning. The Darren Mougey has pulled the trigger on a trade, hopefully helping out the beleaguered secondary of the New York Jets. Justin Fields on track to return Monday night, which is a must-win game in week four. I guess it's a must-win if you want to not worry about starting to monitor Tankathon next week and want to actually focus on hopefully exciting football. Of course, the Dolphins game coming up, we'll preview that, plus picks at the end of the episode. Thanks for joining us, Tim McMaster, along with Zach Rosenblatt. Please like the show wherever you're watching or listening. Give us a five-star review Friday morning. So hopefully we're either, if you're watching live, taking you away from work, or taking you away from the Ryder Cup, which is already going south for the Americans. Unfortunately, this happens every single time. Zach, I was saying to you, like, every time Ryder Cup comes up and it's like, oh, the Americans are going to win it this time. And then, like, right out of the chute, like Scottie Scheffler getting blown out to start the day.
Not ideal.
But two more days. There are the miracle comebacks of the past. They're going to be down 3-1 after the morning session, though, it looks like. How are you?
I'm good. Going to Florida for the second straight week. A lot of Florida trips this year. Feeling good. I mean, I feel better about the Jets, I would say, going into this game than maybe I did coming out of the last one. We can get into that. But, you know, like you said, it's kind of a must win in week four already, at least narratively. And, you know, you can say all the stuff about how much they fought at the end of the game and how they're on the right track. But if you turn around and lose to the 0-3 Dolphins, it's hard to really like say that anymore, and the words will become hollower. And you know, whether it's true or not, like that's just the reality of the situation Aaron Glenn's walking into. Like, this is not a fan base that's going to be okay with him being 0-4. I don't think he has an owner that's going to be very happy with it. So, you know, this is a big game, and the Jets, as we know, it's kind of been a house of horrors in Miami over the last decade. So it's actually kind of funny. I was looking at an old article about, because Aaron Glenn obviously played in a bunch of the, he was a part of like a lot of the big Dolphins Jets moments, including the fake spike. He was the one covering the receiver on the Dan Marino fake spike. He was there for the miracle 25 years ago where they came back in the fourth quarter. But I was watching an old clip from 2001 where they like killed the Dolphins, and he had this like great pick six where he like ripped it out of the receiver's hands and ran it back for a pick six. And it was funny, in the article I was reading about it, an old New York Times article, it was talking about how much the Jets had the Dolphins, like the advantage. They had won, like, you know, however many of the last few games over the last 4 years, they won like 8 games or something. Like, it was like something crazy. And it's just funny like how it seems like this rivalry goes in pockets of time, because the Jets and Dolphins, like, they've had some truly, like, whether at home or especially in Miami, but like even in at MetLife, like that was the place of a Tim Boyle fail Mary on Black Friday. So it's just been a rivalry that a lot of weird shit happens, and the Jets usually like fail in some spectacular fashion. So let's hope that Aaron Glenn can change that.
Yeah, the Dolphins have been every bit as disappointing this season as the Jets have been. All right, let's get into the news of the week, which is a trade. It's like a Christmas present, Zach, when we get a trade.
It really is. For podcasters, it is.
Yeah, it's beautiful. The Jets get Jarvis Brownlee Jr. from the Titans for a pick swap. So they give up a 6th-round pick. They get a 7th-round pick. This is a 24-year-old. He was a 5th-round pick last year, but then started 17 games as a rookie. It's a spot where obviously the Jets at the minimum need depth, right? But like, best case scenario, like considering how Brandon Stevens has played, maybe you have a replacement here.
So the impression I get is they view him as more of
as a nickel.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, you know, Michael Carter hasn't played well and he's banged up. And yep. if you're looking down the line, you know, his contract starting next year is, I don't think, guaranteed anymore. There's very minimal guarantees. So, you know, he's a guy that the previous staff inherited, and I think this staff prefers corners to be a little bigger maybe. So I'm curious to see what this means for Michael Carter. Brownlee's not going to inhibit his playing time anytime soon because he's still hurt. He's going to miss at least this week, I would guess. And he's week to week is what Aaron Glenn described. But, you know, this was, it felt like a random and surprising trade, but like not in a bad way. Like you know, you would have argued defensive end or wide receiver would be the two that like they have to go get somebody like that. But I think Darren Mougey deserves a lot of credit for the way he's kind of found value on the trade market and the way he does. Like, he's not, you know, I think a lot of times Jets fans would get mad when like a young player would get traded to another team for like no draft picks, and everybody would be like, why couldn't we do that trade? Like that was a con- I remember I'm blanking on the guys. There's an offensive lineman who got traded to, I believe, the Jaguars from the Ezra Cleveland. I don't know why I remember that. It was a couple years ago. We got traded randomly before the trade deadline for like nothing. The Jets had offensive line issues. Everybody's like, why do you guys are Cleveland? Why do you guys are Cleveland? You have people on the other side being like, he's not going to fix all their problems. And it's not that, that's like not the point. It's like, it's a young guy on a rookie contract with the potential to be an upgrade either now or in the future. And the Jets weren't really making those deals. Whereas now you have the Harrison Phillips one, which is more like a right now move, you know, veteran play right away. I had a mistake in my story where I think I said he was on a 1 year deal, but it's actually a 2 year deal where the second year is like non-guaranteed, but you know, that was a smart move. They gave up nothing for him. Juwan Briggs was like more of the, you know, get this guy that's shown some flashes. He's young, like 23 years old, and plug him in and, you know, develop him this year and make him a bigger role next year. And he's actually been one of their best players on defense through 3 weeks. And then that's Jarvis Brownlee one. I mean, if you look at it, like you said, he started almost every game last year. It was because of injuries, but you know, a fifth round pick starting that much and playing decently, like he was flawed, but he was a fifth round rookie and he played pretty well, like broadly. And you just got him. I mean, clearly there's some stuff going on that nobody knows about, because you don't just give up on a 24-year-old corner like that. And it's not only that they were like shopping him around. Like the Patriots thought they were getting him and it didn't happen. I think there was another team involved. And when the Patriots didn't work out, the Jets came in and were able to get him for basically moving back from the sixth to the seventh. And they viewed this as a guy who's under contract again through 2027, I believe. Potential starter either this year or in the future. You know, he has problems with penalties. I think he has like 11 in his short career so far, which is a lot. Something they need to fix. And, you know, the coverage stats aren't amazing, but he was playing outside when I think he's more of a nickel corner. But the thing that like should excite you about the immediate future is that he's very aggressive in the run game. He relishes like contact and things like that. And he's graded out as one of the better run defending corners in the NFL since he came into the NFL last year. So this is just like a value, smart trade. If it pans out, it pans out. If it doesn't, you give up nothing for a guy who's not making much money. So I don't get what the Titans are doing. I think a good way to see or to know how to like feel about a trade, if it's a player you don't know that much about, is how the fan base from that team is reacting. And you saw the Harrison Phillips trade, they were losing their mind. Like, how do you just get rid of a leader like that? And if you look on Titans Twitter, which I didn't know was a thing until this, Titans Twitter, like they're all like, what are we doing? We're a mess. We're a mess. What is going on? Obviously, there's something going on behind the scenes. I don't know what. I don't get the impression he's like a bad kid by any means. So I don't know what they soured on. But to like give up on a potential starting young corner that quickly, like for nothing. Like I don't see the value in doing that unless they just view him as a real malcontent. But I don't know. I was very impressed with this move by Muji. It was surprising. I didn't know much about Brownlee beforehand. I'm not going to pretend like I did, but just like reading up and talking to people about him, like I think people were surprised that the Jets were able to get him for nothing, for a young player who, again, started as a rookie. He was hurt this last week, so he didn't play. You would think if you start that much as a rookie, as a fifth-round pick, you're going to get better in theory. So smart move. And by the end of the year, we might be looking at a secondary where, you know, you have Sauce Gardner, Azaria Thomas, and Jarvis Brownlee are your three starters, and those are your starters next year too. So it was a smart move for the future even more than this year.
I feel like there's a few, like it has to be one of a few different things, right? From the Titans perspective, like maybe these malcontent the locker room, but like you said, you've got no impression that that's the case. So other logical like explanations are he started last year because of injuries. Maybe they feel like they're going to move him out of the starting lineup because they feel like they have better options and they don't want it to become an issue with this guy, young kid who started so much and suddenly he's going to not be starting. So they're just like getting rid of him. And then I honestly don't know what else. It's weird. It's definitely weird.
It's a weird. They would, that's why there's like something seems like,
cause it's not even like a rookie contract as like a second rounder, right? It's a fifth round pick rookie contract. Yeah. He's making nothing.
I mean, by being a full-time starter and not being terrible as a rookie, as a fifth-round pick, makes that a win for a fifth-round pick, regardless of what happened the rest of it. If you get a fifth-round pick to contribute that much as a rookie, like that's like you already.
So from their perspective, like, hey, we got more.
So we already could have dreamed. Yeah. So we already outplayed his draft value. Like, if you redraft after how he played last year, he probably is a top three-round pick, I would think. So, And then they turn around and give him up for basically to move up from the seventh to the sixth round. Like, that's a no-brainer that it came across Darren Mooji's desk and he capitalized on it. And, you know, him and the pro personnel department, like, they deserve credit for these, you know, the defensive tackle one. They addressed a position that looked like they had some depth issues. Byron Coward had gotten hurt, but it was very clear that that group wasn't good enough. They improved it. So now one of the best groups on the defense, I think, both in terms of how they played and like the depth. And then you look at the secondary has struggled through three games. He saw an opportunity to bring in a talented, potentially talented player, and he made the move. So, you know, I wrote something about the combo of like the free agency moves and the trades, whereas the free agency moves, I think, so far haven't panned out. It's too early to like say that they're like failures or anything. Like, and I think Stevens is one that everybody's jumped on, and understandably, because I think he's been bad. You know, Cisco, I think, has been inconsistent. Jamie and Sherwood, you can lump in. I don't think he's lived up to his contract thus far, especially in coverage. Josh Myers has been fine relative to the contract. You know, Nick Folk has been really good as their kicker. But like broadly, like the free agency so far hasn't panned out. It's three games. Like, it's, I'm not saying it's not going to. That's just like my evaluation. First 3 weeks, they've needed these guys to step up, and I don't think they have enough. Andre Cisco had three missed tackles last week. So anyway, the point being, like, all the moves they made, like those moves, all of them, I think you could justify why and see their thought process and why they signed those guys. They saw Brandon Stevens. Okay, if we fix him turning his head around, we have a really good player. Andre Cisco, if we get him back to playing how he was playing 2 years ago, we have a really good player. And so, like, you see the logic. It just hasn't panned out so far. And you see the logic in these trades. And so the fact that I think Darren Mooji so far, if you want to like pinpoint like what kind of GM is he, I think he's a really logical GM who's going to work the margins and not overpay. Like, you could say he overpaid Brandon Stevens at the end of the day.
I was going to say that would be the one.
But like, if he overpaid in terms of like the player, but I think if you look at league wide, like $12 million a year for your cornerback too, he's like the 30th highest paid corner. Not a huge deal. Andre Cisco, I mean, the contract is up to $10 million. I believe his base salary is $8.5 million. That's not that much. And it's 1 year. Like, so these are none of these are debilitating contracts. Whereas I think Joe Douglas, who I think, you know, some stuff has aged very poorly and some stuff has aged well. I think there, some of the overpays they made did hamstring them, because you look at all these dead cap hits that they're still paying right now, like, you know, handing out huge contracts to like Corey Davis and, you know, shopping at the top of the free agent market generally doesn't work. And the Jets aren't doing that. And they're trying to find within the margin some talented players. And they've done a really good job in some areas. And so far the early returns haven't been great, but it doesn't mean that Stevens won't turn it around. It doesn't mean Cisco won't, but I think through three games, I think they could be better is my broad point.
We'll see if adding Brownlee to a defense that already has Michael Clemens making stupid penalties week in and week out has a multiplying effect or not, I guess.
I will say just one more point on this, and then we can move forward. Like, the thing I think is fair to criticize is the lack of moves at defensive end in particular.
Yeah.
Like, going into the season with Clemens as your third defensive end, with Tyler Barron and Brandon McGregor's the only other two. Like, it didn't make sense at the time. We called that out, and it's played out that way now that Jermaine is week to week. So, you know, I think Darren Mooji's done a good job broadly with like the resources he has available to him and you know, just the way they wanted to operate this offseason. But I also think it's fair to criticize some of the decisions or lack of decisions as well.
More moves that they've made out of necessity are at the linebacker position, where Quincy Williams and Marcelino McCrary Ball both go to injured reserve, so both out 4 weeks. They signed Mark Robinson off the Patriots practice squad. He's a 26-year-old. Obviously, was on a practice squad, however.
Yeah.
And then they get Ben Neiman, who played for Glenn in Detroit last season. Kiko Muago is going to have to move into the starting lineup. Most likely, there's a lot going on at the linebacker position.
Yeah. So I'd say that's another position where you looked at, okay, you have Sherwood and Quincy at the top. You feel really good about that. I was concerned about if either of those guys got hurt, and we talked about that on the pod a few times. If those guys got hurt, who was going to step in? And the guy that would have stepped in would have been Marcelino McCrary Ball, and he's also hurt. And I would have been concerned if he was a full-time starter anyway. And now you're going to Kiko Maoigoa, a fifth-round pick who got thrown into the fire a little bit last week. I don't think played amazing. It's not ideal if you have to start a fifth-rounder full-time. I know we just talked about Jarvis Brownlee doing that last year for the Titans, but you know, hopefully the evaluation was good on him and he can step up. They have Cam Jones, a guy they claimed on waivers from the Chiefs after training camp. He was more to be a special teams guy. Aaron Glenn said he's going to have to play more. Mark Robinson, they seem really high on, but at the end of the day, he was a practice squad player. And Ben Neiman's a veteran, so I wonder if they call him up this week. He's a guy that's started like 25 games in the NFL. He won a ring with the Chiefs. He's played in like 100 games in his career, knows Aaron Glenn. So, you know, you're going to mix and match. They have to get creative. I wonder if they play more DBs because they're deeper at DB and they're getting healthier back there. So I'm concerned, especially you're about to go against a Dolphins team, which we'll get into later, but where you need the linebackers to be on their money against a team with this much speed, especially Devon Achane, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle. Like, it's not going to just be on the defensive backs to do it. They need the tackle.
Darren Waller coming back too.
Darren Waller coming back. Like the linebackers, the tackling starts with the linebacking group. Like at the end of the day, it's the linebackers and it's the safeties, and neither have done a great job tackling. So I'm concerned going into this game, and I'm curious to see what Steve Wilks does, because so far I don't think Wilks has done an amazing job of like counteracting what the offense has been showing, I would say.
All right, one more health thing, and it's probably the most obvious of them all, right, is Justin Fields, who will play if ready to go, if cleared. It seems like he's on that path. I guess from a big picture perspective, like, there was a world where Tyrod Taylor was amazing last week, right? And we were like, oh, what should they do? That didn't happen. So I think we can all agree that we'd like to get back to the Justin Fields experiment and see what's there. And it feels like this is a great game to really get some insight into that.
100%. Like, I think, you know, maybe it was better that he didn't have to play against the Bucks, who were going to blitz the crap out of him. And he, you know, Tyrod got hit a lot and Fields got to avoid that for a week, but this is a real opportunity for him. Like, he hasn't been officially cleared as of this recording. He was in like the fourth stage of the protocol at five stages, which is non-contact, which a quarterback was already non-contact. He was a full participant in practice. So he's coming back unless there's a setback. So safe to assume he's going to be the quarterback. He was always going to be the starter. I know Glenn kind of didn't answer it on Monday when he was asked about it, but you know, this is a season to evaluate him. As I've said multiple times, and I think I said on Monday, like, you know for sure that Tyrod Taylor is not going to be your starter next year. You don't know for sure that Fields won't. He's already guaranteed $10 million. He's going to be on the team. He showed something in week one. If you can find that magic again, you have something. So this is a great week for it, because, and we'll get into this a little more when we get into the matchup, but statistically, this is like the worst defense in the NFL. Like EPA, they're 32nd. They're really bad against the run. And so you hope the Jets can get back to doing what they want to do, which is run the ball down the other team's throat. It's Fields' of strength. They have really bad secondary. Like, they either traded away a lot of guys or guys are hurt. So, you know, opportunity for him to take some shots, get some confidence, build something there. Josh Reynolds is coming back. Like, they're getting healthy on offense. And, you know, if there's ever a week for them to come out and play better, especially in the run game, it's this week. And that starts with Fields. This is going to be a big evaluation stretch for him. This is a lot of pressure this week for an 0-3 team to get a win. So, you know, I'm very curious to see how he comes out, if he looks more like the week one Fields or the week two, which were the best and worst versions of him. So
there's also, I feel like there's pressure here on the line to make sure. I mean, we talked about how good they were. Like, it seems like Fields has played the way the line has played his first few games, right? Week one, the line was solid. Week two, not so much. And it played out in the way he played. So plenty of pressure on that offensive line to get it back together.
Yeah, the O-line needs to be better, especially in the running game, for sure. Tyrod got hit too much. He does hold on to the ball. But, they played amazingly in week one against the Steelers, against the defense that's supposed to be good. It hasn't looked great through 3 weeks. And it's fallen back a bit the last couple weeks. I think Olu in particular has struggled. Membo, I think, has been solid. He has been getting some help on the outside, but I think he's been solid. And, you know, Simpson had some bad moments this last game. I think Tippmann's been up and down. Meyer's been up and down. Like, they need a little more consistency out of that group, because everything starts up front. I still think that group can be a solid O-line. I think it's pretty obvious now what losing AVT has done. I think you lost your best guy. And ultimately, like I said from the beginning, their ceiling was not as high. Week one was like, I was like, oh, maybe they can be a great O-line. But maybe the reality is their ceiling is being a good O-line, and or an average to good. And you could survive with an average to good O-line, and they just need to be better, especially than they were last week. I mean, this whole season, teams have been blitzing on them. They've not been able to adjust to it or stop it. And, you know, the running backs need to do a better job picking it up. The tight ends need to do a better job blocking. But Yeah, the O-line needs to be better.
We were critical of Aaron Glenn on Monday for his post-game press conference. We were not critical of his sideline celebration. I'll add that. I think we both agree that, hey, have some fun when the moment calls for it. But we were critical of him saying, like, there's no such thing as a moral victory, but then just saying how, like, great things went during the game that they lost. But you're going to not back it up, Zach, but, like, give him a little credit, right? I mean, if we're going to be critical of him, when he comes out and has a good presser, we should praise him. And that happened this week. He got to talk about the sideline antics.
Yeah, you know, it's like you said, like I wanted to be clear. I'm not just, like, going at him because everybody's overreacting to everything he does. And we're all victims of that to a degree. But yeah, we're not going to analyze every single press conference like this. So I want to be clear. Like, we're not going to keep, okay, that one was good. This one, we're going to do a tally.
Wins and losses. South, and we have
true.
Else to talk
about. Maybe we start tallying wins and losses in press conferences and see his record at the end of the year. That actually would be kind of funny. But I thought he was really good. I mean, not only Thursday, I thought Monday after the game, like, he came out and he's like, I'm going to do something a little different. I'm going to call out the things that we need to be better at. And he pointed out, like, the tackling and I'm blanking on some of the other stuff, but closing out, I believe, was a big part. And, you know, he was asked about, and to Brian Costello's credit, the way he asked the question was the right way to do it. He asked it as, like, have your kids shown you the video of you dancing and how it's going viral and stuff, as opposed to asking in the way that, like, you know, he's been getting some criticism from some corners of, like, the internet and radio and analysts of, like, you know, act like you've been here before and things like that. Which I think was a little overblown.
The problem is
they lost immediately after that. So everybody's going to say, oh, he looked like whatever. I hear that, but at the same time, like, you know, he celebrated an amazing play and I don't think they were ready for the last drive because he celebrated that play. Like, there was problems on the last drive and they were not ready for that last drive. But at the end of the day, like, you know, I think players like seeing their coach, like, celebrate with them like that. I think to his point, like, so he was asked that question and his response was like, you know, I'm always going to be me. And I think there's something to respect there. You know, if they lose more, the criticism is going to get louder. You know, he's not getting fired after the season or before the end of the season. He's going to be the coach next year. And so it's a good coaches. I've covered coaches and there have been many coaches who, like, get away from who they are. I think Saleh honestly was one of them. Like, if you look at Saleh in San Francisco, he was someone who was loud on that sideline. He was, you know, running up and down the sideline and he was very vocal and, you know, flamboyant and throwing his arms around and all that stuff. And that kind of went away when he got to the Jets. And I think he was
too concerned with being, like, the CEO of the team. Right. And overseeing everything. And
Like, it's, if you're a coach that doesn't want to have personality on this island, that's fine. But if you're a coach that wants to show your personality, I think that's also okay. And I should say, like, he shows his personality in other ways too. Like, Arian Smith comes off the field after I think he lined up wrong and he was called for it or he had a false start. And Glenn chewed him out, laid into him. And this is a rookie playing his most snaps of his career. And so, you know, he's showing both sides of it. I think fans were always more mad about Saleh not showing emotion in those kind of moments. That's never going to be an issue with Glenn. I think we've seen that already. So, you know, being yourself, it's a good message in life in general, like not letting your job, you know, restrict your personality. And, you know, Chris Banjo talked today about how he wants these guys, he wants everybody to be themselves in that locker room. And I think there's something to be said about that. If this is going to work out with him, I think that part of it is going to be a positive. And if it doesn't work out, people will look back at this dancing moment and laugh. But at the end of the day, like, he was Aaron Glenn being Aaron Glenn. You're not going to see many coaches doing a dance like that. And I think the number two is probably because a lot of these coaches physically can't. Like, I talked to some of these guys,
for having the moves.
Yeah. Having the moves. And by the way, like, this is something, there's some old clips that have come up of him scoring, like, pick sixes where he's, like, dancing in the end zone. It kind of looks a little similar. So he's kind of always been a celebratory guy like that. Anyway, like, I think he handled himself really well this week. Whether that means anything at the end of the day, no, it doesn't. What matters is if you win and if the guy's prepared, and they haven't been so far, and what he deserves criticism for. But he does not deserve criticism for showing personality on the sideline like that. I think that's stupid.
The other exact quote he had was about just like how coaches are supposed to act. He said, "I'm glad people could see my authentic self," which you mentioned. I don't know what it means when someone says, "Is a head coach supposed to act like that? How's a head coach supposed to act?" I don't know, but it was good. I just thought, yeah. All right. Anything else on Glenn?
No, I mean, I think he knows, you know, he'll do a good job of downplaying the importance of this game, but you fall into 0-4 would be really, really hard. So I think he's taking the right tone right now. I'm curious to see what Sunday will look like, how they'll come out at the beginning of the game. Like, I'm tired of these freaking terrible starts. Just like, start well. If you close poorly, fine. But like, start these games better, because that's what you prepare for all week, is the beginning of the game. So if they come out looking a lot better, you'll feel better about this team. And they need a win. Like, that's just the reality. Like, it doesn't matter if you fight until the end. If you lose to an 0-3 Dolphins team where the coaching staff is on the verge of being fired, it feels like, like, that's just inexcusable at the end of the day. So, like, fighting until the end will not be an excuse. Like, they need a win.
There are some, it's interesting when you look at these two teams' seasons so far, there's a lot of similarities. Obviously, one difference is your first year coach and staff versus, like you just said, maybe team coaching staff on the way out. Both coaches, though, the messaging has been the same. We haven't won a game, but we're improving every week. But I thought this stat was interesting. The Dolphins, Jets, both 0-3. Neither team has a takeaway this season.
Crazy. It's
the first season since 1933 that multiple teams were 0-3 with no takeaways. I can't believe they tracked that stat all the way back to 1933. But kind of remarkable that those two teams are now playing each other. Question is, like, something's got to give, right? Because both teams
turn
the ball over. So is this going to be a turnover-free game, or is somebody finally going to get a takeaway? And if they get a takeaway, is it going to be a stupid one, like they basically get handed the football? Or are they actually
I will say
that's a reason you're 0-3 is not having any takeaways.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there is a direct correlation.
The Will McDonald play doesn't count as a takeaway because it wasn't on defense. But like, I think they kind of did. But yeah, I mean, that's just nitpicking. At the end of the day, they have not forced turnovers on defense. And so, it's pretty remarkable that they've gone. I mean, this was a problem with the previous regime. They did not force enough turnovers too. So Tua is somebody who throws the ball quick, doesn't take a lot of risks, I would say. So I'm curious how that happens. I say, for the love of God, the Jets need to get on a fumble. They never do. I saw there's like a Jets Press, I think, tweeted this. He had like a tweet, which I believe for like took me a moment. I thought it was real. I'm like, I need to do a story on this. He was like, you know, over the last 25 years, the Jets have failed to recover 1,905 out of 1,906 fumbles. And I was like, wait, is that real? Like, they've only, but I was like, okay, no, he's just like joking that they never seem to jump on the ball, recover a damn fumble for once. Like, that would be great.
All right. So similarities, both 0-3, obviously. The Jets obviously aren't firing anybody. The Dolphins, we talked about last week, it was the long week, right? They had the Thursday night game to Sunday. And if you were going to let go of a coach, that's the time to do it beyond your bye week. I guess they played good enough against Buffalo because they were in that game for most of the game Thursday night. So there were clear signs of improvement for this Dolphins team against, probably the best team in the AFC. I don't know. I don't even, most people that I've seen are picking the Dolphins in this game, but it's hard to predict which of these teams is going to show up.
I know that that's kind of for both sides. I will say that I think the Dolphins showed more against the Bills, obviously, which, you know, you can get in trouble doing the transitive property thing with these teams, because it doesn't really actually equal out in the end. If you just go, well, this team did this against this team, but that team did that against that team and blah, blah, blah. But I mean, the Dolphins, at the end of the day, have the talent on offense. Like, they have those three players I mentioned earlier, which are fast and can be very productive. A-Chain is one, when he's healthy, is one of the most productive running backs per carry in the NFL in terms of the amount of touchdowns he scores and how many big plays he gets. And the Jets have done a terrible job tackling. So, like, it's like they say, a stoppable force meets a movable object is how you would describe this right now. And, you know, these two defenses have been highly disappointing. I think the Jets, I had higher expectations for than people had for the Dolphins defense. And, you know, a lot of pressure on Steve Wilks, because the defense was the staple of this team the last few years, and it's been a problem. And if they don't fix their issues, which the biggest one is tackling, which, you know, they tackled in training camp. We all made a big deal about it and it hasn't panned out. But, you know, I don't think that either team is going to blow out the other one. I think it's going to be close. I lean towards the Jets winning just because I just have better feeling, better vibes about this team going into the game. I think their offense should be better. I just am concerned about the defense. Like, is this going to be another high scoring game? If Justin Fields needs to lead them down the field late in the game, is he going to be able to? But if you're ever going to have a get right game, it should be against the worst defense in the NFL. And that's what the Dolphins look like. So they're a very uncompetitive defense. Like, it seems like the effort's kind of poor. So, and I do think Anthony Weaver is not a bad defensive coordinator, but it just seems like they just don't have the horses on defense. So they do have some talented defensive linemen, Jalen Phillips, Bradley Chubb, and the tackles need to stop them and they need to keep pressure off of the quarterback. But this is a defense that you should be able to beat, especially in the running game.
On the offensive side, obviously, you mentioned the weapons, and they did have extra prep time for this game. And, you know, it was only, we talked about it on the last episode. It was only a couple of years ago that McDaniel was a genius offensively. Yeah. So we'll see what they kind of dial up here with the extra time. I mentioned Darren Waller being back as well. But the defense, you mentioned one stat where they're worse. Against the run, they're literally 29th in run stop win rate. So it's, yeah, I would imagine both teams, like, this could be a short game in a sense.
Yeah, it's, I think you froze a little bit, but a Monday night, I actually just discovered this the other night. I didn't even realize it was not an 8:15 p.m. game. They're at 7:15.
Oh yeah, they're the early. Yeah. They're the early.
Yeah.
Monday night.
But is, like, on paper, is there a worst possible? I mean, it's, who's going to stay watching that game, honestly, unless it's close? Like, it's 2-0-3 teams. Dolphins, I don't know. I'm not going to say it. Their fans are kind of crazy, but I don't think people would nationally care about the Dolphins right now. I don't think people nationally care about the Jets right now. It's that being the money. I can't remember. Oh, the other one's Broncos, Bengals.
Well, yeah, but it's like no joke.
Which is also not, like, yeah, which rough, is also not that exciting. It's a rough Monday night. People will watch it, but on a personal level, I was very excited when I heard it was going to be an hour earlier because primetime games, I usually don't get out of there until like 3 a.m. and road games are even worse because you have to fly back in the morning. So, not trying to complain. I get to go to Miami on the company dime, but I was very excited when I heard it was an hour earlier, and I'm curious to see what sort of viewing it is. Because I mean, the Jet, whenever you're in a national game, even if it's not the full breadth of a usual national audience, you're gonna have a lot of national people seeing the Jets for the first time or watch them closely for the first time, and so they're gonna be hyper analyzed on Monday. They're gonna be hyper analyzed the day after, and so you need them to come out. You need Aaron Glenn to show what he's saying, that they're fighting, is true, because the whole world will be watching. So
Taylor Delgado's been on fire in the chat today, but he said, who's going to watch this game? Me and the rest of the Sickers in this chat. So yeah, that's fair to say. And that's why we're here. All right. Should we do picks?
Let's do it. I got my first pick right last night. I picked the Thursday night game. So,
oh, nice. You got it in on time. I did. Yeah. I completely forgot. All right. First, let's go to the standings. First, I did want to pick a week three just because, where is it here? Yeah. Jauncey, 16-16 has taken the lead with back-to-back 16. So very impressive. Wow. Stuff there. In the weekly results, if I go to week three, sorry if you're listening to this, NCH last week, 9 out of 10.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, so congratulations to NCH. That is impressive stuff. But let's get to this week's actual picks.
All right.
And these are my picks, but these are terrible, more than likely. Although I've been a consistent, I think it was 5-6-5. So I'm right there in the middle as far as things go. I'll start with the Jets, Zach. I am taking the Jets. They are getting 2.5 points at Miami, but I think they win the game.
Yeah, you know, I think when I initially did this earlier in the week, I put Dolphins, but I think I'm going to switch that now. I think Jets plus 2.5. That is a little lower than you would like, because if the Jets lose this game, they probably lose it by a field goal, so that's kind of tough. But, you know, if you think they're going to win, you take it. So I'm going to switch that right now, actually, as we're live.
I'll get on a few of these other ones.
Yeah.
I have a lot of road teams this week, which probably will end badly, but
so I
Commanders on the road winning. I have the Saints on the road at Buffalo just because 16.5 just seems like too much in the NFL.
Actually, by the way, as you say that, I realize all my picks are road teams, which is a disaster.
I took the Eagles on the road. That's 3-0 versus 3-0, but like the Bucks 3-0 doesn't feel as real as the Eagles 3-0. And it's 3.5 spread. And then I Baltimore too on the road and Green Bay on the road. Yeah. A lot of road teams and not playing it, not playing in, I mean, taking the Ravens at Kansas City is probably really dumb, but like, I feel like in the AFC, I'll just say this one and then I'll pass it off to you to talk about your things. But in the AFC, I feel like there's kind of like three elite teams, right? You have the Bills, you have the Ravens, and in theory, you have the Chiefs. I don't know if we've seen that yet.
I don't think they are not history. So far.
Yeah. So I really think that with that spread of under a field goal, I think the Ravens get it done because they lost to Buffalo in that heartbreaker. I think they get this one done. And we're going to continue to wonder what the Chiefs are at 1-3.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of barely beat the Giants.
Yeah.
So I don't feel great about the Chiefs this year. By the way, we had a morning game on Sunday in Ireland, the Vikings and Steelers, which I'm always fun to wake up to some football on Sunday, although I am traveling that day because of the Monday night game. But I do have the Vikings in that game because they really impressed me. I mean, they destroyed a Bengals team that didn't have Burrow, but they're so well coached. That defense is legit. Like Brian Flores is so creative, man.
And Pittsburgh has not been impressive. Like barely beating the Jets, but then scraping by the Patriots last week.
I put Chicago plus one. They looked really good last week. The Raiders have been interesting, but I don't think they've been great. And I put Panthers plus 5.5 because the Patriots seem like a team that's going to make a lot of mistakes this season.
I took the Patriots.
I could see it, but I don't know. The Panthers played a lot better this last week. I'm not going to say all my picks. I also had Jaguars plus 3.5. Purdy, if he plays, is banged up. They just lost Nick Bosa for the year. So it's an interesting game. So we'll see. But yeah, there's some interesting games this week. Picking all road teams is going to definitely backfire on me, though.
Yep. All right. This has been fun. Final thought before we say goodbye.
Yeah, I think I got everything off my chest. But yeah, we'll probably come back on Tuesday because it's a night game, obviously. So sometime Tuesday, we'll hit you guys back with the next pod. And I'm also on Jets Final Drive that day as well with Connor.
Oh, one last thing that we didn't mention from Brian Sternbeck. This is Zach Wilson
game. Ooh, that would be...
But this is a fun question. If Zach Wilson plays, does Garrett Wilson volunteer to play defense? Well, he probably won't get the ball.
Yeah, I was going to say, Zach Wilson's never been good at throwing him the ball, right?
So it doesn't work either way. All right, good stuff. Thank you, everybody. We will not be with you on Monday, obviously, because the game is Monday night. We'll be back on Tuesday with a recap. I don't know what your travel plans are, Zach, but at some point on Tuesday, we will get together and recap the game, which will get the Jets on the win column for the season. And we will not have to think about Tankathon just yet. Thanks to everybody for joining us. We'll talk to you soon on Flight Plan.